The Bible and Modern Science with your host, Dr. Joseph Henson of the Science Faculty of Bob Jones University. Here is Dr. Henson.
Thank you. We have interrupted the discussion we were having about the organisms that are known by the scientific name as Echinodermata, the spiny-skinned organisms, by simply going back and reviewing a little bit of how we got to this place, why we ended up with that discussion. And I won't rehearse all that was said, but I hope that for those of you that may have started listening to the programs recently, this may help you understand exactly how we got where we are. And I didn't just get up one morning and decide, well, we're going to talk about starfish today. But we have. This is a following of the sequence that we have that we began back with the protozoans, simply to show that evolution does not provide a sensible, evolution doesn't provide any connections between organisms in different phyla. Their structures are unusual, their functions are unusual, and wherever we find structures in an organism, that requires the presence of a genetic basis of instruction that will allow those structures to be formed. And the notion that somehow they could have been formed slowly makes absolutely no sense. And the idea that you could have a parent that doesn't have those those structures, that could produce offspring that do, whether it happens immediately or whether it happens over a period of time, is simply foreign to any understanding of our modern science of genetics. Genetics, whatever else genetics may teach, it teaches that parents are going to pass on to their offspring those characteristics which they have. They cannot pass on to them characteristics they don't have. And evolution must try and argue then that over long periods of time or whatever, that this process is a continuous creative process, that the genetic material in an organism can change and actually pass on to offspring characteristics that are not there in the parent. And we have discussed several programs talking about starfish in general. Again, as a simple summary here, we've talked about the fact that the organisms in this particular phylum are very unusual, wildly different from organisms in any other phylum. And the idea of finding some kind of common ancestor that would have produced these is an exercise in futility. There simply don't exist any common ancestor, and have not existed ancestors that could provide this connection. And as we will see, even the organisms within one class, we're going to talk about the Ophiuroidea, these are the brittle stars, there is not the possibility of a common ancestor between a starfish and a brittle star. So evolution is simply attempting to provide answers where none exist and where none are reasonable at all. And by virtue of the popularity of it and the presence of evolution in most all of the biology textbooks and on the PBS programs and all the rest of this, a person may read or listen to these things and finally get shell-shocked to the point of, well, boy, if all of these brilliant scientists are telling us this, then that must really be what happened. Well, as we've tried to explain, these brilliant scientists are simply acting on the basis of some assumptions, in my mind, not only incorrect assumptions, but very dangerous assumptions. And what the motivation for that is, we can speculate about. In any case, we want to go now to the Ophiuroidea, the brittle stars. Talked earlier about the fact that the common arrangement in starfish or in the echinoderms is pentamerous. That means they have five parts. The common starfish have five ambulacra or five arms. The brittle stars, most of them have that. We talked about the water vascular system at some point, and I might make one point here in starfish that is different from the brittle stars. We talked about the fact that starfish have what are known as tube feet. Now, it's a little difficult to convey without pictures or illustrations what these things are. If you can imagine a series of hundreds or perhaps thousands of little tiny water-filled round balloons. Then you have a picture of what the actual tube feet are. The round part of the balloon would be known as an ambulacral. The bottom of it, where the tube feet are, is simply the portion that allows the starfish to attach itself or relax itself, turn loose of it. And this occurs because of the water pressure in the round portion of the imaginary balloon that either increases or decreases. And this allows, if the amount decreases, then the water pressure inside would cause the tube foot not to be attached to something. The ampulla is the term I'm trying to think of. This would be the term for the little round part of the balloon. The tube foot would be the bottom part. Now, if the amount of water in the ampulla decreases, then the end of the tube foot, they're sometimes referred to as suckers, but this is a little bit misleading because there really is not a sucker in the sense of you sucking on a soda straw. There is simply a little round tube, and when pressure is decreased, there is a concavity that will occur there, and that concavity in the individual tube foot would allow that foot to attach itself to whatever the surface is they're walking on. So we talked some about the tube feet, and I've tried to describe as simply as I know how what they are. And this is interesting in that the tube feet of brittle stars do not have that ampulla, so that while in starfish it is the tube feet which are generally most important in their moving from one place to another, in the case of the brittle stars you don't have the ampulla, and the movement of the tube feet is primarily muscular, and that would in turn mean that in brittle stars you don't have that sucker activity present. So here, with between one class and another, although the structure is at least partially present, the function is very different. And the innervation, the use, the thing that activates those tube feet, very, very different. And for those of you with some knowledge of genetics, you begin to understand that even though the structure may look similar, genetically there must be some wide differences in the genetic material itself. Now, I've gone to a specific before we've talked much about the generality. The brittle stars, the difference, the recognizable difference between brittle stars and starfish is simply the way in which the ambulacra, the arms, are joined onto the central disc. And in the case of the starfish, these are very broad joinings. And in the case of the brittle stars, you will have the central disc, and then the connection between the arms and that disc are very, very narrow. And if you don't know anything more about these two kinds of starfish than that, you have information that will allow you to spot the difference and identify the difference between them very quickly. So you have the five arms present on both of them, but the differences, again, I find immensely interesting. One of the differences between brittle stars and starfish is that there are no pedicellaria. And for those of you that have been listening, these are little pinchers that are found on the surface of the body. In some cases, in the sand dollars, for example, and in the starfish, these little pinchers apparently, pincers might be a better point instead of pinchers, but the structures there simply have the capability of cleaning off the surface of the organism. And the interesting difference here is that the brittle stars don't have any of these. Now, even though they're almost microscopic, again, the fact of their presence requires some genetic material in the chromosomes that is going to be absent from the genetic material of brittle stars. And whatever else you know about reproduction involves passing on of generally identical genetic material. So even though this is a very tiny structure, the presence or absence of it is very interesting in organisms that are similar. And perhaps some of you are catching on without me saying it, but I'll say it anyhow. This then provides a problem for the evolutionist. Think a little bit initially. How did the pedicellaria, where did they come from to start with? Whatever your answer to that is, all of a sudden we have organisms that look very similar to them. They don't have any of them. And it's an interesting difference. Now, we talked about the madreporite, for those of you that were listening. This is the opening that allows, in starfish, this opening is on the aboral side. Starfish are flat. The mouth of the starfish is on the bottom. That would be the oral side. The aboral side would be the top part of the starfish, and on the starfish, that's where the madreporite is. But in brittle stars, the madreporite's on the bottom side. And as a matter of fact, there are five of those, more than one anyway. The madreporite is on the opposite side of the starfish. That requires some genetic differences. The whole water vascular system, take a while to describe it, and I'm not sure it's useful to do that, but the whole water vascular system of the brittle stars, very, very different. Its purposes are different. Its functions are different. The uses of it, the tube feet in starfish aid in locomotion. Tube feet in brittle stars don't do that at all. And if you could see a variety of examples of brittle stars, you see them, usually they're much larger, not always, but many times they're much larger. They have some long skinny arms that are made up of what are confusingly or perhaps improperly referred to as vertebra. They're simply plates that exist there. And it is here that these brittle stars often can simply turn loose of one of their arms and grow new ones. And so as we look at the characteristics, sexes are separate in brittle stars. And we have some unusual and interesting differences between brittle stars and starfish, sufficiently different that there cannot be any reproductive connections. And for those of us that accept creation, these things are very obvious. God simply chose to create brittle stars a little bit differently from the starfish. From the standpoint of the evolutionist, there really is no good solution to that problem, and speculations run rife. But again, they don't have any basis in science. So a creationist view of these things, in my opinion, is much more reasonable than the evolutionist attempt to provide such explanation.
Thank you, Dr. Henson. You may send email to Dr. Henson at jhenson@bju.edu. That's jhenson@bju.edu. Or write to Dr. Joseph L. Henson, Box 34621, Bob Jones University, Greenville, South Carolina, zip code 29614, in the United States of America. You're invited to listen next time for The Bible and Modern Science.